today on the Dental Experience Podcast.
I did land in dentistry by accident.
Relationships with people last far longer than money lasts.
His mouth is completely different than anybody else's. I can't tell you anything because I'm not the dentist.
One of my favorite places to go is a place called the Sycamore.
You can't really build a successful practice just by having the best marketing or just by having the best technology.
This is the Dental Experience Podcast. Here's your host, Ryan Vett.
Well, thank you so much for listening to the Dental Experience Podcast. My name is Ryan Vett and I'm your host. I'm really excited to have a special guest with me today, Amol Nirgudkar. He is not only a dental industry veteran, but an incredible businessman who really understands what it means to create an experience worth sharing for everybody in the dental office, from patients to the team and everything in between. And he's dedicated a lot of his life to making that possible through multiple business ventures that we're going to learn about today, to just a number of different things. So I'm really excited to have you on the show, Amol.
Thank you, Ryan. This is fantastic. Thank you for having me.
Of course. And I wanted to have you as one of the first guests of season one here because we have a special partnership that we're going to discuss towards the end where you're going to provide some calls, some real calls that are based on real calls to this show. And we're going to discuss really how important the phone call is in the dental practice. I recently in August published an article with Dental Economics that talked about just how important it is once you get that patient on the phone, how important it is to have that conversation, that human interaction. So often we focus on marketing and bringing the patient into the practice or connecting them with the practice, which are all very important. But at the end of the day, if you don't nail that phone call and have a great experience on that phone, chances of that patient actually coming in for a scheduled appointment are not that great. So I love the product that you've discussed. But let's start back many years ago with your history when you were a CPA focused really on the dental space. And I'd love to hear and have you share with the listeners a little bit about your story and your background in dentistry.
Sure. I mean, I did land in dentistry by accident. I mean, I'm a qualified CPA. I run one of the medium-sized firms in Tampa. I ended up focusing on healthcare and dentistry because a lot of our clients were in that space. And one of the principal focus of our firm at CPA firm was not just simply to do their books and do their taxes, but to understand their businesses from the inside out and help them make good financial decisions. And in order for us to understand their businesses, we spent a lot of time in dental offices, I did, and just shadowing different types of people, assistants, hygienists, dentists themselves, and truly understanding what makes the dental practice tick. And what are some of the challenges that they face as they make? At that time, my focus was financial decisions, not really anything else operationally.
Right.
And over a course of time, we developed an expertise in consulting with dentists and really giving them good advice that sometimes that was not related to taxes, but, you know, how do you make good business decisions? And that's how we got started. And over a period of time, the word got out. More dentists and word of mouth, went viral, and people found us from all corners of the country.
That's wonderful. And at some point in that experience or in that journey, you actually owned dental practices yourself. Is that correct?
Yeah, we did. And one of my pet peeves about consulting was that I really have to live the life of my client. You know, I wanted to make sure that I felt the same pain that my dental offices faced, and I wanted to learn really the business. And I think what's the better way of learning a business than actually having a part of it or owning it? And I basically bought the dental practices, a few of them, to really truly run the operations, seeing for myself the challenges that are faced on a day-to-day basis by dental offices. And that was it was not meant to own dental practice. It was meant to really understand the business better.
I love that. I love that you put yourself in the shoes of your clients, because I think so often consultants go in and they say exactly what needs to be done and leave, and they haven't walked where the dentists have walked or where some of the team members have walked. So I love that you did that. Through that journey, what were some of the biggest aha moments that you experienced when you ran those practices?
Well, the first thing I realized that it's still a very much a people business, right? You can't really build a successful practice just by having the best marketing or just by having the best technology. It starts with people, and you have to focus on building the best team possible. Assistants, hygienists, front office, back office. Your dental, it starts at the top. Obviously, you have to have an amazing dentist. But everybody on the team is equally important in driving success to that dental practice. I realize that the hard way. Obviously, initially you're a consultant, you think, you know, you go by what you heard, but when you actually feel it, that team cohesiveness is so important. And making everybody feel important as a leader in that practice, that's adding value and making them feel that there's meaning and purpose to their life, to their professional life, was the biggest aha moment that I learned. That unless I got everybody on board to believe in the same things and to believe in the why of the practice, I was not going to be successful. So that was the big aha moment.
That's wonderful. And you touched on something that I think is so important. It's this idea of your personal and your professional life. They're very much connected. And so often I think we separate those two. And I know you have a pretty incredible philosophy that you've developed over time, and that's based on some principles I believe your grandmother shared with you.
Yes, it is very much so.
I would love for you to share that with the listeners and just hear how that's shaped your business and your past businesses, your future businesses, your current businesses. And I think that would just be beneficial to hear that that philosophy.
You know, when I read Ray Dalio, he wrote a book called The Principles, one of the best business books ever written in the last 100 years. You know, it reminded me of and I didn't really understand that I was living by these principles until I read somebody else who live by principles. And there are four distinct principles, and two of them were truly inspired by my grandmother. Well, the first one was chase problems and not money. And in every business that I started, I really wanted to look for what the problems are, and not really have goals in terms of, oh, this is how much money I want to make. Let's figure out what problem we're trying to solve. And once we solve somebody's problem, that's worth some money automatically.
Right.
And my grandmother, in her own way, she never was allowed to go to school in the 30s. Hmm. But she said, you know, there was an old Indian saying which says, if you run after money, it runs way faster than you.
That's good.
That kind of stuck in my mind, is like, don't run after it, because it's going to run really, really faster than you, and you won't be able to catch it. So instead, run after problems, try to solve problems, try to understand how to solve problems, and money will take care of itself. So that was the first principle. The second one really came from Drucker. And it really, you know, basically stems from that. You can't really manage or run something that you can't measure. Right? So measurement was very important.
Right.
Measurement was the first step. So every business, again, I created, whether it was a dental practice or our fund or my CPA firm, I wanted to make sure we had the right metrics to measure, that told us what we were doing right, that told us what we were doing wrong. And because nobody, at the end of the day, all of us, right, whether we are in whatever profession we are, we want to be better.
Right.
Nobody wants to do a bad job at whatever they're doing. But only if we knew what to measure, we could manage our operations better. So measure what you want to manage was my second principle. The third one really came from Steve Jobs, which was fail fast, fail often, and succeed. Right. So one of the things that Jobs did at Apple was, you know, figuring out how do you really iterate fast and figure out where you could be doing wrong. You know, sometimes the problem, if it can be identified quickly, a failure that can be identified quickly, you can actually fix and change course, right? But if it sticks around for a long period of time, it's harder to change course. And,
exactly.
And that's why some of the biggest companies fail, because, you know, their product development cycles are so long that you know, it's too late by the time to change course. So the same principle we used in our company at Patient Prism was, you know, if we understood our failures every day, every hour, whether they were marketing or phone conversion failures, we could actually train our staff to do better, because now we're, you know, understanding we're failing fast, and it's allowing us to really succeed because we are understanding our failures.
Absolutely.
And the fourth principle, really, that again came from my grandmother, was you know, people before profits. And I wear these t-shirts all over the country at trade shows, and we've gotten an amazing amount of, you know, positive feedback from that message. And it really sounds simple, but basically what it means is that anytime I have a financial decision that I have to make that that puts the interests of money before people, then I will not take that. I will always ensure that my stakeholders, which are my customers, my staff members, and anybody around me, I look for their interest before I look for my own interest, which is the profit's interest. And it's always benefited me in the long run. In the short run, it might be an expensive solution to invest in your people, to believe in your people, to believe in, you know, motivating them and all that stuff, right? It, in the short run, it seems expensive. Right. But in the long run, those are the same people that are going to, you know, work hard for you. They're going to, you know, be your loyal customers and give you a break when you need it, right? And I've always been blessed with amazing people that have come to my rescue when I needed it, because I did come to their rescue when they needed it too, right? So it's you know, bringing that out, you know, putting that people before profits philosophy, it's really, really helped me build some amazing relationships with all sorts of stakeholders.
That's wonderful, and I really appreciate you sharing those four philosophies. And I think the first and the last by your grandma, and just talking about the importance of not starting something or being involved in something solely for the money, but the people. And you mentioned it just now, the idea of having relationships with people lasts far longer than money lasts. Money's fleeting, and I think it's easy to get caught up in that, you know, in the pursuit of money, but especially in the dental industry where you are focused on people first, you are focused on patients. I think that's huge. And then obviously Drucker is a management guru, and love his pieces, and Steve Jobs as well. As humans, as people, I think we're so often afraid to fail. And I think that philosophy from Steve Jobs, he basically turns failure on its head and says, it's not a bad thing if you do it fast and you learn from it. And I think that's really important. And I think you've probably taken those four principles and really created right now a company called Patient Prism that incorporates really all four of those, it seems like, both in your company culture, but in what you do for a dental office. Do you mind talking a little bit about Patient Prism and sort of what you do?
Sure. So again, as I said, I created a marketing company. I was really good. What I found out at age 35, and I'm 41 today, is that I was really good at connecting with people, and I was I had a good ideas on how to send the right messaging that will attract the right type of clients into my CPA firm. So when I created a company called Dennis Profit System 6 years ago, was with the idea that I could help Dennis find the right type of patients, and not just by, you know, using all the overwhelming jargon that was out there regarding marketing and marketing techniques, but really focusing on communicating the why of the dentist to the community so that the people gain trust. In that process, we were massively successful in bringing the right type of patients into these practices. We realized that, oh my God, the first principle was, I just found out a problem that has existed in dentistry for a long time, which is patients are calling in after looking at marketing, different modes of marketing, and not being able to schedule an appointment. And the, right. The reason for that was the receptionists were not being able to, you know, get these patients in the door. So Patient Prism really was a call of action to us, saying like, what can we do to solve this problem? And we said, one day, me and Mike, our co-founder, sat down one day and said, hey, could we really use not just the call recordings to monitor quality, but could we use artificial intelligence and machine learning to be able to identify things faster, identify our failures faster by having a machine look at these conversations and being able to provide that feedback to the dental office very quickly so that they know, okay, we had a patient who called earlier that couldn't schedule because of A, B, C, D, E.
Right.
And here's, without having to listen to that phone recording, we invented a technology called call visualization, which we received our first patent last year.
Which
was a way to visualize the conversation without having to listen to it. So all you had to do is hover over the red and the green and the yellow areas, and you could exactly know a 5-minute phone conversation could be deciphered in 10 seconds know exactly what happened, and being able to call that patient back. So what Patient Prism does now is it looks at phone conversations that happen between new patients and your front offices. It looks at all the opportunities where the patient didn't schedule. It runs those calls through our algorithms that understand what happened. And within an hour of an appointment not getting booked, the dental office gets an alert via text message or an email that tells them, here's what they did wrong. Here's what they can do to fix it. Here's some training videos that we've developed that address the problem that happened at the top. And within an hour, you get this entire feedback that takes you almost maybe less than a minute to process.
Wow.
And allows you to call the patient back. And we've seen such amazing results. We've seen almost 20 to 25% of these patients have come back because they received a surprise call from their office, the doctor's office, saying that they would be welcome as a patient again.
Wow, that's absolutely incredible. So one in every four patients is responding, where that previously they wouldn't have had that booked appointment. Is that correct?
Yeah, one in four patients is coming back. And it's actually coming back and rebooking, which I didn't think the rate would be so high, but just empirically we're noticing. I'm just completely blown away by that statistic.
That's amazing. And one of the things I say often when I lecture in writings is the idea that stop treating your phone like a utility. It's your main profit center. It is the dental office's main profit center. I mean, after someone goes and researches you online, and if you can get them to the point where they pick up the phone and call, if you're not doing everything you can to capture that patient at that exact moment, you're losing. In a recent article I wrote, I did some calculations, almost $150,000 a year, calculating the average new patient volume that you could potentially be losing every year. I mean, that's some serious money for any size practice to just leave on the table by not worrying about how their phones are being answered every day.
You're right on the money. It's right in some high fee for service practices that goes to maybe $250,000 to $300,000. But you're right. Average is about $150,000. You're right on the money with that statistic. And there's a lot of money left on the table, and sometimes it's about the simple things, right? And we'll talk about this when we listen to these phone calls of what the simple things are. It's not anything complex, right?
Right.
It's just human psychology.
Right. And you mentioned the phone call, so I think that's a perfect segue. One of the things that we're trying to do on this podcast is really try to create an educational opportunity where people can walk away at the end of the podcast with something that they can implement in either their personal life or professional life or in their practice that same day. And I'm really grateful to Patient Prism for being willing to take some real life calls that have happened at practices and have those portrayed on this show to really help say, hey, here's what happened, here's what went well, and here's what we can do better, and here's what you can implement today in your practice to make sure you're not leaving that anywhere from $100,000 to $300,000 a year on the table just because of things that you might not have heard before. And I think it's a really great resource. So first of all, I want to thank you for being willing to be a contributor on the show and provide these calls that have actually happened and provide your expert feedback. And I think it's going to be a great opportunity for our listeners to really hear and learn just simple techniques that they can put into practice every day. So with that, do you want to go ahead and listen to the first call?
Absolutely.
Let's do it.
Thank you for calling Patient Smiles. This is Felicia. How may I help you?
Hi. I was on the internet and I saw that you have a $29 coupon for a new patient special for an exam and I think x-rays.
A $29 one? Yeah, we have that.
Okay. Can I apply that to a consultation for an implant? I'm calling for my son.
Yeah, he can come in and have the doctor look at it. He doesn't have any dental insurance.
No, he doesn't. I have another question. If he needs a bone graft, can you answer how much that's going to cost me?
I can't.
You can't?
You have to understand, okay? You really do. His mouth is completely different than anybody else's. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you anything because I'm not the dentist, mm-hmm. and the dentist has to be the one to assess the situation and to give you the pricing.
Uh-huh. I understand. I'm just trying to save money and make sure that I know how much it's going to cost. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get it. But I would be doing a disservice to you to give you an amount, and what if it ends up being double that amount? Then you're going to be pissed at me, and I can't give you a price that's false. That's just not fair to you guys.
Yeah. Well, your website says we provide high-quality dental care at affordable prices.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping you'll be more affordable than somebody else.
Well, I'm hoping so. We have different things we can look at, different financing, different insurance, you know, stuff you can apply for.
And you also have discounts that you give, right?
Yeah, we also have a discount dental plan that we participate with, so there's a wide range of stuff we can look at to help you out. I just can't give you any fees. Mm-hmm. I can't be the one to tell you.
All right. Well, so it's just $29 for the exam and x-rays, right?
Yep, for the exam and x-rays.
Okay, I appreciate your help.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you for calling. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow, after listening to that call, there's just there's so much going on, from some words that probably shouldn't be used on a phone call to I love how the caller actually quotes the website, and the receptionist kind of him-haws around that. So there's a lot going on. I would love to hear your opinion on really what's transpiring on this phone call and some of the things that the front desk team member could really do to help bring this call to an appointment, because at the end of the day, no appointment was scheduled, and this patient was calling for an appointment.
Yeah, and what, you know, one of the two biggest factors that prevents patients from making an appointment are fear and cost, right? And this was a $29 special, and we couldn't schedule an appointment for having such a low barrier to entry into the call. So that's kind of unique. We had this long conversation. You know, what struck me the most in this conversation was in the middle of the conversation, the receptionist says, "You're going to be pissed at me if I get it wrong," and that's not the appropriate language to use. It diminishes the professionalism that you're trying to project to your caller. But overall, you know, I mean, if I were to analyze this call quickly and really understand it, it really boils down to building trust with the patient. And the way you build trust with the patient is you have to first empathize with them, and really understand the patient was calling about his son who needed a dental implant. So asking the name of a patient is always a good idea, number one. Number two, asking the name of their son. Like, what's your son's name?
Right.
And it humanizes the call, right? And it's not about the process, but it's about humanizing the experience. And really finding out what happened, what transpired for this implant to be needed. That really gets them to earn someone like, man, these people actually care about me. And then second, in moving right along that phone conversation is now how do we build trust, right? So then, you know, we have to talk about competency. Competency is very important because, you know, you want to go to a competent healthcare professional. So you want to start talking about how amazing the doctor is in handling cases like this, implants. We've done thousands of implants over the years. We use the best quality materials. We use the best quality bone. Since they're talking about the bone, right. We don't use, you know. And then really get them into really believing that, man, this is the right place that they have called.
Yeah.
And then address the issue of cost, right? Affordability, because that's one of the things that obviously they have called you on a $29 special, so they are price conscious. So instantly now going into, okay, we have really convenient options available to get this done. We have a discount plan. We work with several financing options. This could be as low as whatever the number is, right? And then now you have taken care of. You empathize with them. You're building their trust. You're projecting competency, and now you're also making it affordable.
Right.
And all these things can be easily said in various different ways, right? So that's what it's all about, really. And at the end of the day, right, at the end of the call, the most important factor is we need to offer an appointment, right? We need
exactly.
to give them a few options, saying, hey, we have Friday at 2 o'clock or Monday at 3 o'clock available. Let's schedule, come on in. It's a no obligation consult. Come on in. We're not going to charge you anything. It's only going to be after we discuss all the treatment options available, and let's get you in the door. That is what the most important goal of a receptionist is to be able to schedule that patient to come in, because once they come in, they get an amazing experience, hopefully, and they're gonna, you know, go through that process. But
absolutely,
following these basics could have converted this call, and this $29 patient could be worth $5,000 to $6,000, and that's a big number.
Definitely. And I think one of the things that you touched on that I just want to reiterate having stories is so important relating to, hey, we take care of cases like this. If, you know, if they were to ask a question and maybe it was a baseball incident and you could say, hey, you know, we've dealt with a baseball injury before. Here's a story of how we've helped someone, or our doctor is really skilled at placing implants and here's how many implants he or she has done. I think whenever you're trying to talk to someone and help make them feel more comfortable and build that rapport, you hit the nail on the head. Really building that quality is important. But I think for everyone that works answering the phone, whether it's in the dental industry or otherwise, they should have preset stories that they kind of know to go to on different scenarios so that they can really relate to the patient and build that confidence with their provider's ability to place implants or whatever it might be. So I think I love that part of what you said. And then obviously connecting and empathizing. I think in this call, there seems to be a very, not intentionally cold, but there's no connection made. It's just two strangers talking on the phone. I think if you can bring them into the fold and get to know them, get to know the son's name in this scenario, that just helps build that rapport.
It's not a transaction, right? At the end of the day, where a dentist, you know, we are in the business of changing people's lives and getting them to better function so that they can eat better, look better, have, you know, and the receptionist has to really believe that.
Right.
And
right.
It's not a transaction. Oh, $29. Like, come on in. And,
exactly.
So as much as we can humanize this and make it about the patient and not about that procedure, then in the more trust we're building, and you know, the better chances of that patient eventually, you know, even accepting treatment, because that's another challenge that dental practices face, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I think the idea you talked about at the beginning, if they're calling because of a coupon, they're immediately price conscious, and knowing some of those flags to just be aware of and sensitive to when you're having that conversation are really critical. I often talk about not overcoming objections, but understanding objections, because an objection comes out of a place of fear or uncertainty. So instead of trying to overcome and argue that, you say, oh, I understand that, you know, dental procedures can be expensive. Let's talk about, and you mentioned financing options. Let's talk about CareCredit, or let's talk about Clear, or some other financing options that they have.
Absolutely. And it's vital to actively listen to the patient. It's one of the criteria we use in Patient Prism to evaluate phone calls. Did you actively listen to the patient, or was it about you saying, you know, Simon Sinek had this wonderful podcast, say, be the last to speak.
Right.
And it says, you know, you want to be able to listen to what their issues are without having to just spit out everything you want to say. And it's really, really important to actively listen to the patient and really put yourself in their shoes. As easy as it sounds, it doesn't happen.
right, absolutely. I think in our lives, we just get so used to doing the same thing over and over again. Sometimes we forget that we're dealing with people that have real needs, real concerns, and it's easy to do. No matter what you do, it's easy to get just kind of in your routine. And I think emphasizing it's not a transaction. You're actually helping change a patient's life, whether it's building their confidence with a better smile, allowing them to eat better. If you're doing some TMJ stuff, maybe reducing headaches and other issues that they're having. I mean, there's just so much opportunity, and understanding that you're making a positive impact on a patient's life really, really changes the experience. So I want to thank you for sharing that call with me, and I'm really excited. This is just one of many calls we're going to listen to throughout the season, and you're going to be my guest on other episodes, and we're going to have little segments just like this where we're going to look at different real-life calls that actually happened and try to figure out how you can have better practical takeaways that can be implemented in your practice today to make sure you're creating that experience worth sharing. So I really want to thank you for that.
Thank you, Ryan. This is fun for me, actually.
Yeah, it's good. Well, I want to go back. I know you're a family man, and you shared earlier those four points, and two of which came from your grandmother, and I love that so much. You've got a daughter that's sort of a celebrity. She's a pretty amazing individual. Do you want to share a little bit about what she's got going on?
Yeah, I at her school, when she gets that attention, she doesn't like it too much. But she's been a pianist. Now she started at four. She's 13 now. And she just has an amazing, amazing aptitude for music. We realized that, again, through an accident, she started winning competitions. And now she's played all over the place, from Carnegie Hall in New York to Royal Albert Hall in London. She played on Elton John's piano this past summer.
Oh, wow.
The red piano that he used to play on. But truly is an amazing you know, inspiration even for me. She wakes up 5:30 in the morning on her own to start practicing every day.
Wow.
I was not this disciplined at 13, believe me. but that that's something that we, you know, that I enjoy doing, traveling with her all over the world. We're going to Russia this year. She was invited to perform at a festival in St. Petersburg, Russia, in early November. So that's my life outside of work.
Well, that's awesome. Well, to end this episode today, we're actually going to have a piece that she performed. It's one of Beethoven's pieces, Play Us Out. And this is actually her playing, I believe it was last summer, at a performance. So we're going to have her play us out. Thank you so much for being my guest, Amol, and it was great having you on the podcast today.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you very much. This was excellent. I enjoyed it very much.
It's trade show time. Here is everything you need to know about this week's dental trade shows.
Well, this week we've got the Ohio Dental Association meeting. It's a great meeting. I actually have the opportunity to speak both Thursday and Friday there. Really excited to speak to about 250 team members. But whenever you go to a new city or a city that you're not familiar with, it's important to have an expert in the city, your own personal concierge. And I've got a great friend, Brad Winter, with me today on the show. He is a Columbus native, and he has some great ideas of things to do and places to go while we're in Columbus. So Brad, welcome on the show.
Thanks, Ryan. I really appreciate you having me and looking forward to giving everybody a little list of things to go do, eat, and drink while they're in Columbus.
Absolutely. Well, I think we should probably start with the most important thing. What are some of the best places to go get a drink around Columbus? I think after the show, there'll definitely be that opportunity. So where would you recommend? And if you have some menu items there, what would you get?
Yeah, so I agree. After a long day at a show, it's always good to, you know, find a little place close in the city to have a drink. So I have five places that I think the viewers would like to go have a drink. So
five places. So you've drunk Columbus pretty well.
I guess you could say that. Yeah, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I guess
you grew up there. It's okay.
Right.
Go for it. Let us.
All right. So one of my favorite places to go is a place called the Sycamore, and it's located right in the heart of German Village. And if you guys aren't familiar with where German Village is, it's just south of downtown, quarter mile or so, and it's a historic district of Columbus. They have brick houses, cobblestone streets. It gives this kind of old world feel to it. So the Sycamore is right down there. Great craft cocktails, great wine. It's just a little hole in the wall place that I think everybody should go to at least once and have a drink and have a good conversation.
That sounds good. Maybe we'll have to hit it up. What else do you have for drinks in Columbus, in and around Columbus?
I have two places that if you're looking to have a group of you go out and want to, you know, do a little bit more than drink, we have the Bit Bar, which is an arcade room and bar. It's really cool. So they have all these vintage arcade games that, you know, if you were young, you grew up, you know, going into the pizza shop and playing or having at your house. So the Bit Bar is great. It's right in the Short North. So it's real close to the convention center there where the meeting's going on at. And then a place called Penn's Mechanical. So it's actually a bar that has a couple bowling lanes in it. So you can make reservations. You and a group of people can go bowl, have some beer, they have great cocktails. It's a great atmosphere, usually live music going on. So those two places you can go if you have a group of people and just kind of want to enjoy each other's company and have some fun.
Nice. So as far as things to do in Columbus, you said there's a lot to do. If you came a day early, you stay a day late, or if you're really ambitious and squeeze something in a break, what are some things to do in and around Columbus?
Yeah, so really Columbus is a great place to go explore. If you come in a day early or stay a day late, Columbus Zoo and Aquarium is by far, you know, next to probably the best zoo in the country, home of Jack Hanna. I don't care what age you are, it's a great place to go take a walk on a nice fall day and just kind of explore a little bit. So it's a great place to go. Right down in the city is a place called COSI, which that's a place that it's a science center for kids. But again, an adult, it's fascinating the things that they have there. And I highly recommend it to anybody. Another place you can go to if you're just looking to take a quick break is the Franklin Park Conservatory. It's right down the street from the convention center. Do a little walking, be out in nature. It's a great place to go and just hang out and enjoy the outdoors.
So it seems like there's a lot of places for anyone, no matter what you like, whether you've got your family with you and want to see a zoo or some science, or go out for a nice stroll.
Yep. I think
any other places?
Yeah, I think the most important thing, Ryan, is there's no better place in the fall than Columbus, Ohio, to watch an Ohio State football game. So,
and you know, if there's a game this weekend.
I might be a little biased, but you know, if you want to get out of the meeting a little early and catch a game, then no better college football town than Columbus, Ohio.
There you go. There you go. Well, if someone needs a bite to eat, and I know you and I think we've got dinner plans on Thursday night at the convention. Where are we going, first of all? What are some of the options out there?
Well, I'm going to let you pick after we go over this list, because I always feel like if you're the guest, you should pick, because I've been to these places a number of different times. So again, I kind of want to reference back to German Village, because it's a great place to go. They have great restaurants down there. Two places, if viewers want to go down and walk around the village, is Barcelona, which is a Spanish inspired restaurant. They have this dish called the Paella Barcelona. It's to die for. I get it every single time. I don't even look at the menu. I just ask for it. So
you know what you're getting. Nice.
You guys want to take my word for it? I won't let you down. And then there's a famous place down there. It's almost 100 years old, called Lindy's. It's fine dining, so you have to get a little dressed up to go. But if you're into doing that sort of stuff, that's a must place to go as well.
Okay, so is Lindy's dressing up, is that like suit and tie dress up, or is it like smart casual, or just no jeans?
Definitely wear a jacket, you know, a blazer.
Okay.
Blazer, dress for the ladies. So you want to look your best when you go there, because you never know who you're going to run into.
There you go.
Yeah, and then a couple places right down the convention center that I think are top places to go is an Italian spot called Marcella's. And then the Pearl. And if you're going to go to the Pearl, you got to get the Devils on Horseback. Basically, that's a fancy deviled egg. that's what I got for that
place. Devil on a horseback. Okay.
Yeah, horseback. So it's a great place. It's a Cameron Mitchell restaurant, which if anybody knows anything about Columbus, Ohio, Cameron Mitchell is kind of the big restaurant guy in the city. He owns, I think, almost over 20 restaurants and bars. This is one of his top places. So definitely
he might know what he's doing.
Yeah, he might know what he's doing, and definitely get a reservation before you try to sneak in the door there one of the nights you're in for the meeting.
Awesome. Well, are there any other places to eat, grab a drink, or go explore that you'd recommend?
I think one thing that everybody should do is go to a place called Wolf's Ridge Brewing. And it's right there in the city. It's a quick Uber ride from a hotel or the convention center. But it's a local brewing place. It's got three different rooms. So you have your restaurant, you have the actual bar, and then you kind of have a mix of different things in the third room. It's a great experience. It's got a deck out on top of the building that kind of overlooks the Short North. It's a great place to go have a beer, tell some stories, and enjoy the rest of the night.
And the one thing I love about Columbus in the late summer, early fall, is just how beautiful the nights are. I mean, it's not too humid, it's not too cold, not too warm. It's just perfect. It's easy to walk around, and that viewing area, that deck sounds like a great place to be.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. It's a great place in the fall, and I think anybody that comes to Columbus will have a great experience.
Awesome. Well, Brad, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show this lovely Monday morning, and I look forward to seeing you this weekend, and I'm going to have to look through each one of those recommendations. They will be in the show notes of this episode, and we will pick something and go hang out Thursday night there. Thanks so much for your time.
All right, Ryan. Thank you. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you for listening to the Dental Experience Podcast. For show notes, to ask a question, or for more information, visit www.thedentalpodcast.com. The ideas discussed during this episode are the opinions of the participants and do not serve as legal, financial, or clinical advice. Until next time, this is the Dental Experience Podcast.